The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week 2019 title sponsor, Techstars. At the core, Techstars is a company founded by entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs. With more than 300,000 alumni and 10,000 mentors across 150 countries, Techstars is a worldwide network that helps entrepreneurs succeed. To learn more, go to techstars.com. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. This is one of 20 interviews recorded in a pop-up backroom studio at Dojo 4 during the 10th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode 55 is F. Rodriguez, pugnacious digital marketer and sabbatical savant. Among many things, he's heavily involved with Ignite Boulder, TEDx Boulder, and Boulder Startup Week. F and I enjoy a lively and free-flowing conversation touching on a number of subjects, including what brought F back to Boulder after 7 years living and working in a number of far-flung locations, why brands need to focus on the problem, not the product, things we don't see in Boulder but would like to, and why you may be listening to podcasts at the wrong speed. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with F. Rodriguez. Why are you so passionate about community?
I think for me, I am, and no one believes this, or maybe they do and it's awkward, but I am fairly introverted.
Clearly.
Yeah, I know. You see, everyone is sarcastic about it. But the reality is, it's draining doing a lot of the things that I've been lucky enough to do over the past decade, you know, running Ignite or TEDx, et cetera. Yeah, I mean, convening people is immensely valuable. People need that tangible, tactile extension of what happens on Twitter, what happens on Facebook. But putting it all together and dealing with vendors and sponsors and stuff, I mean, it's a lot of interpersonal stuff. And for someone like me, it's hard. It definitely is taxing. But that said, I love it because of the former reason. It provides value. And so that's the reason I'm drawn to it. I know that what I'm doing is, you know, helping Boulder as a city, as a place where people land, whether it's for Google or for their own venture. So if they arrive knowing full well that they've got an Ignite Boulder ticket, that it's going to be a room full of people just like them, not one-to-one, but people who are drawn to creativity, passion, whatever, that's a good feeling that I had a small hand in that. So that's why I keep doing it in a nutshell. But it is draining. I'm not energized by a lot of human contact. It takes a lot out of me, but I love it all the same.
What are you calling the workshop you're doing next week?
Yeah, so the company is called CMX. They've been around for a while. They were founded by a good friend of mine named David Spinks. And for a long time, it was like an online resource and a summit, like annually in California, I think. And then they got acquired, and the company that acquired them wanted to do a bit more with it. So what if they had little mini summits in key cities around the U.S.? Great idea. So I raised my hand for the Boulder event because Boulder is tailor-made for this kind of thing, and it's happening. They didn't give me a roadmap in terms of what the event needs to be, like the format and the boxes you need to check, which I love. So yeah, I'm trying to think of what would I want more of as a community builder? Is it bringing in, you know, VPs from top companies? I can do that. Is it dissecting a case study, something that, let's say, Apple did? I can do that too. Is it just getting the chairs in a circle, like I said, and talking about what we're working on, what we're doing, just kind of a venting session? That works too. Is it an inventing session such that we're talking about ideas that we've had that we haven't been able to execute on the brands we work on, or the physical communities? Open to whatever, as long as people are there for the right reasons, not selling a product. I don't care if anyone buys a CMX subscription or whatever. It's more making you a better builder, because building is exhausting.
Will most of these people in attendance be from the tech and startup community?
I don't know. Yeah, so far, that seems to be the way of it, just because of where we are. I would prefer that not be the case. I think if you ask anyone in Boulder, I mean, the community is vastly different than it used to be in terms of who feels like they are welcome, In the past, yeah, startups and tech companies have been our, for lack of a better term, bread and butter. Some people are allergic to bread. I'm conscious of this. But if you look at the track listings for Boulder Startup Week this year, no, it's not just that. It's the spectrum. It's the gamut. And so I would love to see that reflected, but we'll see.
Because it seems like Boulder could benefit from this sort of like summit or convergence between people from within the tech community and people from the greater community at large, because it looks like there's some disconnect there.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I was listening to Andrew Hyde on this podcast, I think, very recently, and he was talking about the lack of public speaking events in town. And he was wondering, kind of opining, you know, why is that? And part of me wonders if it isn't because maybe some of the community organizers for other sectors, other precincts of activity aren't, I don't know, maybe they're just not taking it on for some reason. Maybe there's something we could do to egg them on such that there could be like a food-focused Ignite type of event in the future. I think that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you have to have those people comfortable enough with the enterprise that is running a massive event, because it's a lot of work. Like I said earlier, it's exhausting and you get a lot of very petty feedback. It's all quite helpful and good, but again, it can wear you down. Absolutely.
Last night at Ignite, you delivered the sacrificial deck. Is that what it's called?
Yes, indeed.
And that's the opening, just the opening presentation, let everyone know how Ignite works. And you talked about how you felt like you were a ghost and you were wandering aimlessly through this world, and you've worked a lot in Boulder,
yeah.
And then you left and you went to Chicago and
Seattle
and Amsterdam,
Seattle,
and Switzerland, and then you came back to Boulder, and it got a little surreal. You wound up in Taco Limbo, and Andrew Hyde came and rescued you from that, but you realized that Boulder was your place.
Yeah. I mean, it was a very easy framework to kind of tell that quick story. To get everyone up to speed, the sacrificial deck in terms of Ignite is what it is meant to do. It's meant to introduce the event, but it's also meant to diffuse the stress that is building among our speakers. No one wants to go first for anything. I mean, in any sort of group gathering, when you're asked to introduce yourself, no one wants to be first to do that. So this is our way of taking that off their plates. So yeah, from 2008 to 2012, that was me. I did the first deck every time out. A bit of levity, you know, a bit of nonsense just to get people into their seats.
Break the ice.
Exactly.
Warm it up.
And so last night, I mean, it was a lot of fun, but it was also really from the heart. So the whole ghost analogy thing, I left Boulder in 2012, and the prior 4 years I had spent building anything I could to develop this community. TEDx, Startup Week, Ignite, BOCO, if anyone remembers BOCO, Game Camp, like anything. And then I left it all for a variety of reasons and moved to Amsterdam, moved to Chicago, Seattle, Switzerland, and only recently moved back after 7 years. So this is my first onstage appearance at Ignite Boulder in 7 years. And so as I was putting together my slides, I was trying to think of something funny, but also something with a little value. And what I came up with was an analogy where I died on stage at Ignite 18 in May 2012, and that happened. That there was a slide behind me at that event that said, "Rest in peace, Mr. Pug. Here are the dates of your involvement. You're leaving us goodbye. You're dead." So yeah, I like to think, okay, well, maybe I was a ghost at that point, and I floated and explored the world, learned a lot, had a ton of fun, met a ton of amazing people. But as I said in the presentation, what I wanted was to come back. Maybe I didn't know it 5 years ago or 3 years ago. I know it now. So yeah, I use that as the framework for my talk. Here is what I chose to do. Here is where I went. Here's why I'm back. And it happened to coincide with Ignite Boulder 38. 38 straight sold out event. I mean, it was just ideal. And so I hope people took a little bit away from it beyond just my Photoshop skills, which are dubious but earnest. So yeah, it felt really, really, really good.
What does Ignite do for the community?
Ignite provides a platform for people who are unstable on platforms. I'll elaborate. I would say most of our speakers are not public speakers. They're not comfortable with the prospect of being a public speaker. If you could have been in the green room, and you have been last night, hearing their discussions about, you know, how many seconds do I have between, you know, this slide and my name slide or whatever, frantic, not panicking, but clearly a little unnerved. I love that we can take people who are that antsy about public speaking and give them, what, close to 900 people to speak in front of. And they're all quiet. We work really hard to keep the audience respectful, mindful, because this is not easy. I say that, I think I said that like three times last night in my intro. This is not easy, certainly for this group of people. Now, if you go to a massive conference where you spend $500 for a ticket, different scenario. These are pros. They roll up, they do their thing, they fly right back out. No, these are people that you'll bump into on Pine Street, not even Pearl. Maybe they want to duck people and they take Pine.
Mm-hmm.
I love that this is a platform for them to feel not famous, but heard. That is so important. We've seen people build careers based on Ignite Talks. Oh, it felt so good. And then they do it at another event. And then maybe they do podcasts or whatever. Yeah, it is an enabling platform. And I love that we make it available for $15 a ticket.
And it is really incredible the way you've created this culture. It's incredible how truly attentive the audience is during the talks and respectful. Usually, you know, you go to anything and there's going to be people, you know, standing at the bar in the back, yeah, and they're just kind of muttering to themselves, and there's none of that. And that's pretty amazing.
It took a while to get there. The early days of the event. So I've been involved with Ignite since Ignite 2, which was in a classroom on the CU campus. And everyone in the room, for the most part, knew each other. We were all friends. We were doing this thing and drinking beer. There used to be a lot more heckling. Once upon a time, we had a Twitter wall. So we would put a screen up behind the speakers, and as people were tweeting with our hashtag, it would show up behind the speaker. That's a lot of real-time feedback that is very unnerving. Now, in the context of people who all know each other, that's fine. You know, I mean, if I'm, you know, taking a jab at you, that's cool because I know the librarian. It's all right. But if you're, again, somebody who's never spoken in public before, that's the last thing you want.
Right.
So we parted ways with that pretty quick, but I love what it is now. It's so attentive, so respectful, hard fought, but an amazing experience.
Yeah, it is. And as somebody who went through the speaker experience for Ignite 37 back in December, I just want to say to any of you listeners out there who are thinking about doing it or want to do it but are terrified, please just do it. It's a really profound experience. The people around you are supportive. The other speakers in your cohort are super, will be there for you, and you will be happy to be there for them. And it's pretty much the most forgiving audience you could ever perform in front of, or
agreed,
not even perform, but stand in front of and express yourself and be vulnerable in front of these people.
Yeah. Today's May 16th. So we opened submissions for our next event this morning. So to your point, now is the time. You can buy a ticket, or if you really want to, you can submit a talk. It's on right now. There's no excuse.
And you don't need to have a solid idea of what you're going to talk about right now.
No, we don't want slides. We just want, like, give us that kernel of passion or story or whatever it is that you would love to articulate. We will work with you. I mean, there's multiple rehearsals. We've got people who will help with slide design. I mean, I won't say we'll do everything for you, damn near.
Yeah, it's an incredible experience. And if you're at all interested or curious about it, just go ahead and submit an application. So talking about some other things, you've worked for a lot of different companies in terms of social media experience and marketing and that sort of thing. What do you see companies doing that makes you think, what the hell are they thinking?
Yeah, I think there is a lot more listening that could be done. I think brands have a really strong sense of their own identity. Like, we stand for this, we stand for that, we look like this, these are our brand colors. I think genuinely listening to customers and how to empower them, how to make them better, whatever it is they're trying to achieve with your sneaker or your smartwatch or whatever it happens to be, that I think is by far the most important thing that not every brand is doing enough to, I won't say that they're not listening, but are they acting on what they're hearing? And I've worked brand side multiple times and for agencies, and so I have deep experience with this. And sometimes it's inconvenient what customers want sometimes isn't what is sexy for the brand to promote. I'll give you an example. So I was working for a smartphone company who's based in Taiwan. And all the time, like constantly, we would hear customers complain about battery life. Like, I want to use all these apps. I want to use location-based stuff like Swarm or Foursquare. I want to take photos. I want to make animated GIFs. All of this is taxing on a device. So if we can produce something that will really last you all day, that's a win. Instead, what too many companies do is they'll add weird camera features, or they'll move the buttons around or adjust the bezel or some other needless affectation instead of attacking what customers want, which is a phone that lasts all day. That's what I want. Like, when it gets to around 7 p.m. and my phone is getting red, I lose my mind. Then I have to go find an outlet, especially if I'm traveling. But it's not sexy to solve a battery problem. It's sexier to add some other new thing. So that's something that just drives me insane, where you know what the problem is, but it's an inconvenient fix. Either you can't do it, or it's just not fun to sell that fix. Drove me up the wall.
Do you see companies coming around to that, or that's just very...
I think so. I mean, I'd like to think so. I guess it depends on the vertical, but I know that... Let's take a weird example. So the trailer for the new Sonic movie just came out, and Sonic doesn't look like Sonic should. And the fans made this abundantly clear, to the point where I think the director of the film has promised that they will fix this before the film's release. So in this instance, customer feedback is halting the, I won't say release of the film, but I think they thought they had it locked up. Apparently, no, not the case. So could this work in other verticals? Not just film, but a coffee maker or a pair of sneakers, headphones? Maybe. I mean, I think if people band together, make enough noise, and social media enables this, yeah, I think we can get what we want. Maybe. I mean, it depends. If they're a massive enough company, they don't have to listen to us. I'm really curious to see what happens with the Samsung folding phone, where it wasn't customers so much as influential reviewers who pointed out, no, this does not meet the standard. This is not good. Does that mean it doesn't get released? I don't know. But I love that people can make enough noise to stop something or change something. This can be used irresponsibly. Absolutely, people are petty. But I like it as a, I don't know, as a dynamic that I think marketers and brands need to pay attention to.
Do you think that this is maybe a big distinction between the successful and the failed startup? Is the failed startup maybe, they both start out with their why. This is why we're doing this. We have a passion for solving this problem. But the failed startup might just get stuck in that space. Like, we've got the why. We know what the problem is. This is how we're going to solve it. Whereas a successful startup says, okay, we've got our why. We've got the problem. We think we know how to start it. But we need to get some more feedback from our customers or our potential customers to make sure that we are actually addressing their needs.
That's a really good point. I mean, I think it goes so many different ways. I was at a panel yesterday during Boulder Startup Week, hosted by Ben Travis, who does the Boulder Marketers Meetup. Mm-hmm. Brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. And there was a gal on the panel named Rachel Beisel. I think she works for Carbon something, I forget. But she said something about how startups need to focus on the problem, not the product. And I loved that. It's succinct and it's alliterative, P's and P's. But you know, I think it speaks to what you're talking about, which is a focus on what are we trying to do here. And when I say we, that assumes that you've got the customer in mind. If you're just trying to make a sexier mousetrap, okay, go to hell. That's nothing. We're trying to kill rats. We're trying to kill mice. Mm-hmm. I love mice. I love rats. Don't get me wrong. I'm using an analogy. But I thought that was very, very strong, a very, very clear way of putting your focus in the right place. And I try to apply that wherever I can, even with like event feedback. We get a lot of very interesting feedback. And if we lose sight of what we're trying to do, and I won't speak for, you know, every event organizer, but I think generally speaking, you have a sense of what the purpose of this event is. As long as you've got that in your sights, yeah, you don't need to deviate because someone on the internet or someone via email is clamoring for you to add X, Y, or Z. So I loved that particular saying. I meant to tweet at her about that. That's on my list of things to do. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, customer feedback is, it can be tricky, but as long as you're fighting for that problem, I think you're in the right space.
You're a sabbatical savant currently.
Yes.
And you've worked in the past for some pretty big companies. When the sabbatical, if and when the sabbatical should come to an end, what do you see yourself doing? Do you go back to the corporate world? Do you start your own thing? Do you do something more community-based, something completely different?
I think about this constantly because I feel like I've done a lot and it's hard to determine which was the best experience. Like, I've worked for massive brands. I've worked for big agencies. I've worked for small things as well. And my community work, which has always taken place between the hours of 6 p.m. and 2 a.m. It's always been a side project. I've never been paid for anything I've done, whether Ignite or TEDx, any of it. And that's by design. I don't know. I think about this, as I said, a lot because I feel great coming off of an event like Ignite, where you filled a room and gathered sponsors and given money to a nonprofit, and it's right to feel good. But I stop short when I think about properly monetizing all of that. Like, oh, could this be a career? Because I know people who are event planners as a career, and a lot of them don't love it, mm-hmm. to be completely honest. They've been very candid about, if you're doing it for fun, then it's fun. If you're doing it for a living, second guess that decision. Now, that could be, you know, a few bad apples in an excellent barrel. I don't know. So I don't have a clear answer. I know that the time that I am lucky enough to have right now, I'm filling it with as much as I can. I helped out with a thing called 10-10-10 in Denver. It's a program where it's run by Tom Higley, who's an old friend. They basically get 10 startup CEOs, so serial entrepreneurs, who are between gigs. Maybe they had an exit, they're taking some time off. 10 CEOs over 10 days trying to create new ventures to solve 10 problems in healthcare. They've done one for water as well. I think they're going to do one in the future for another different area of problemness. But yeah, I went out for 10 days because I don't have a healthcare background. I wanted one. I wanted to have a better understanding of opiate addiction or sleep deprivation or just even how healthcare works in the US. And I felt like I gained a lot from that. So to your earlier question, while I think through what I want to do next, I'm not watching Netflix. I'm not sitting idle. Other than the Ignites that I run or the events that I run, I'm trying to find conversations that, I don't know, bend my brain a little bit. And there's plenty to be had in the Front Range, absolutely. Not just Boulder. I mean, I used to malign Denver a little bit because, you know, Boulder's so much cooler and we have, I don't know, prairie dogs. And it turns out I was wrong. It turns out there's a lot to love about Denver, about Longmont, and all points in between. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in Rhino and the milk market and all that stuff. It's really, really cool. So just trying to broaden my palate while I can. I know this is a very lucky spot to be in.
What do you see in Boulder, or what's something in Boulder that you don't see that you would love to see? Aside from a bowling alley.
Wow, that's a really good one. That is a question I would love to ask at my event next week. Because, yeah, I don't have a great answer to that. Because given my own biases, given my worldview, it's hard for me to answer that because it seems like all the things I like, we have. I think I'd have to get out of my own mental bubble and talk to someone who is maybe fresh to town from New York or Omaha, Nebraska, to get a sense of what is missing. Because I feel like all my needs are fulfilled, but again, I'm a use case of one. And this kind of goes back to some of my background in UX, where you aren't the customer, right? It's so easy to think that your needs and your preferences are, you know, the path forward. I wish I could answer that question, but this is good, because now I'm actively thinking about what could we use more of other than a bowling alley or... Yeah, no, that's an excellent one. I'll be thinking about this the rest of the day. Ah, the Vibrarian, you got me.
I would like to see more. There are a lot of incredible artists in this town, and I would like to see more support for them. I would like just to see a greater, more of a cultural movement in this town. I think there's so many people moving here now from the big cities, and they're relocating to Boulder, and they're coming from places that had a huge, vibrant cultural scene, not just art, you know, music and all of that. And I feel like Boulder is wanting for something like that. And there seems to be enough money in this town to support something like that. And there should be, you know, people who live in Boulder are way above average in terms of being well-traveled and just sort of their worldliness in general. And so it's really amazing and frankly a little depressing to me that there isn't more going on here in terms of all of that. Music for me especially, but for a lot of things. And
that's I think you're right. I think the only thing I can think of, and this is, again, just a peek into my brain, gaming is enormous. Mm-hmm. And I haven't really tapped into any sort of gaming community here. I know that there's a lot of activity around pinball in town. Ryan Wanger, who's an old friend who used to help run Ignite, he's doing a lot to help that community. I know there's board game nights and stuff, but in terms of, let's say, esports or competitive gaming, you know, whether it's console or PC, I love that kind of stuff. Always have. That said, yeah, I can think of one gaming tournament in Boulder, at least, that I was aware of. This was back maybe in February. And maybe it's because there's not a lot of gamers here, or maybe it's that they're not being convened. So I won't say that we need that, because it's more tech stuff, to your point, like maybe we have plenty. But yeah, no, as I'm thinking about this question, that comes up to me. And I think yours is a much better answer. It's a much more noble answer. Yeah, no, I love that question. And I never think about it, because I just feel like, oh, we got it all. And that's so narrow-minded.
Yeah, it's one of those things, maybe you don't really think about it too much until somebody asks you about it, because there is certainly a lot to love about Boulder. What's your primary creative outlet?
Lately, Photoshop. I'll clarify, I'm not a designer. Like, early in my career, I did a little bit of design, like messing around with pre-existing logos, like cleaning them up. Nothing very, very good. My core ability is comms, writing and ideating. However, I love Photoshop. And not to clean up people's photos and to go proper uses of it. What I do, inevitably, if I've met you, within, I would say, a couple days, I probably have found a photo of you, cut your head from that photo, put it into a folder full of other heads, so that when I want to make an animated GIF of you, or Photoshop your head onto someone else's body or whatever, I got the heads ready to go. Exactly. So I do this constantly. I think it unnerves people. I feel really bad for my best friend, Andrew Hyde. I've made, I would say at this point, hundreds of different Photoshops of him, mostly to disturb him, to ruin his day, because that is a sport that I play. But for other people, I do it without even thinking. And I love that experience of taking a photo of, you know, two friends of mine posing in front of a waterfall or whatever, and turning the waterfall into Mountain Dew, because I can, because I know how to do it. I do it, as I said, constantly, and it is a creative outlet. I feel delighted once it's done. And what's really amusing is periodically, like on Facebook or Twitter, someone will post a photo, like within my friend group, and somewhere in the comments or replies, someone will say, it's a countdown until F sees this. And then I do what I do. Mm-hmm. So it's not the most valuable creative outlet. Like, I'm not really doing anything for humanity, but I love it immensely. And again, I'm not a designer. I'm not even very good at this. I just am persistent and, dare I say, pugnacious.
Yeah, nice. I'm the same way, though, with Photoshop. I call it Photoshop.
Oh, there we go.
And I barely know what I need to know to do the things that I can imagine doing.
That is the story of my life. And you literally just articulated my life. I know just enough to do the things that I think I want to do, And then I go do them because no one can stop me.
Right. And then you get to a point and it's like, okay, and if I can learn just like a little bit yes. more, and I'll go ask a graphic designer friend, you know,
or I mean,
how do I do this one thing?
And YouTube she'll tell me. YouTube is stocked with tutorials. I mean, if you wanted to do, it took me forever to figure out how to do animated GIFs mm-hmm. because Photoshop isn't really set up for it. There's like separate software for it. Or you could bulldoze your way in and figure out how to do it without opening another program or spending more money. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to your point, there's always a way in. And for me, I just love it. I love it to death.
Yeah. Like for me, it's making like mixtape covers and that kind of thing. Or Yoriko from Boulder Startup Week hit me up about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, and said, hey, send us your logo and we'll make you a sticker. And I was like, okay, great.
I got to make a logo.
I made this thing, these stickers on the table in front of us, and I did that in like an hour, and it's like one of my proudest moments that I kicked out a passable logo in an hour.
No, I mean, that's the thing. Even in my career, like, because this is all my personal life, but in my career where I've been able to, I try to learn the thing as opposed to just asking someone else to go do it. So I've learned video editing, currently learning audio editing. Andrew Hyde and I are doing a podcast. It's utterly ridiculous and terrible, but I wanted to learn how to do it, how to add sound effects, how to, you know, what is the word, like when you increase the volume in something when it comes in and then decrease it when it goes out?
I don't know what that word is. Okay. I should know, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
The point is, like, yeah, I love that.
Mixing.
Yeah, exactly. I'm learning how to mix audio, you know, so that something comes in when you want, comes out. It's not so abrupt. I mean, yeah, these are all aspects of who I am, not as a professional. Like, I don't expect to be hired to do design work for anybody. That's not an aspiration. But within the context of having fun with my friends against their better wishes, this is great. And there's no shortage of ways to go in. And there's more and more mobile tools for this. There's like apps upon apps to make quick memes, you know, whether it's a fake tweet from somebody, you know, where you just add their face in the avatar section. That can be done very quickly. I love it. Absolutely love it. I think my friends hate it. I don't know. I need to ask them. I'm certain Hyde hates it, but I love it.
I think you should just don't even ask. Just keep rolling with it. So one last question for you. What is the optimal speed at which people should listen to this podcast?
The Vibrarian. You're going to go in on this. Okay. So here's the thing. I walk a lot. I don't drive. I walk constantly. I hit 16 to 18,000 steps a day. That's not a flex, because in a city like Boulder, there's a lot of ultra athletes here. Like, mm-hmm. So that's not a flex. But on those walks, I listen to podcasts. I love podcasts. I listen to yours. I listen to Techstars just released one. Laura Rich over in Denver. Anything. Like, give me a podcast. I'll listen to it. However, that's not scalable. There are only so many hours in the day. I can only walk so much. So I listen to every podcast, regardless of how quickly you speak, at 2x. I know that it's a lot. I know that it is probably having an effect on how quickly I speak. I've been informed by dear friends that I need to lay off the coffee. I don't drink coffee. It's becoming problematic. I'm aware of this. However, I'm not stopping. I can't do it. Mr. Davis, I'm not doing it.
All right.
2x or nothing.
2x or nothing. Fair enough. F. Rodriguez, thank you very much.
That was F. Rodriguez, sabbatical savant, digital marketer, and active participant in the Front Range tech and startup community. Follow F. on Twitter at Pug. Episode number 55 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week Adventure Track sponsor, Brandzuka. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Honey, Matter, and Zayo. We're also supported by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for recording gear and studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, comments, and guest suggestions are welcome. Reach me at joel@dojo4.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.